slay, but this is how cute and nerdy my husband is. He legitimately doesn't know anything about diamonds or who's nice or any of that stuff, but he's a museum nerd and he lived in DC. And when he saw the Hope Diamond and he saw who set it, he was like, man, if these people can set the Hope Diamond, then they'll be fine for my future wife. That's for sure. And then he met me 5 years later.
Damn.
Yeah,
Hope, I mean, highly questionable. I'm Dan Levitard. That's L. Duncan's engagement story. This is Bomani Jones. Let's get started.
Hello, Brad.
Yo, I can't imagine being that ambitious.
How worried should the NFL be about the Titans and Vikings COVID shutdown?
All right, so as we absorb this abnormal new normal, we sort of got used to, okay, some college football games are going to get canceled. Virginia Tech is going to get knocked out for a couple of weeks. Baseball games are going to be canceled. But basketball has spoiled us because basketball hasn't had any of this because Dr. Fauci told us that if football does not play in a bubble, this was going to happen. And so now the scenario has arrived where the Titans are closing down their facility. It seems obvious that they're not going to be able to play games for a while. I don't know how you make that stuff up. I also don't know, because the reporting on this has felt kind of flimsy, what the NFL's plan is. They thought that maybe the army discipline of their setup would allow them to be able to have the militaristic rigidity to protect them from this unknown virus. And now you have a bit of the start of a calamity on your hands because the baseball season feels fractured in uncommon ways. But football, weirdly without fans, didn't seem that the televised product was changing that much. And now comes change that nobody is actually prepared for, because no matter how much they say to expect the unexpected, you cannot prepare for the unexpected.
Yeah, but is this under the heading of unexpected? Because I feel like it should not be. Like, as of right now, at this moment that I'm speaking into this microphone, there are 8 members of the Titans organization, not roster, but organization, that have contracted COVID-19. This should have been something that they could see coming. And in fact, I would like to think that it is something that they saw coming. Now, there's a possibility it'll be some shorthanded Titans. They'll be picking some dudes up off the waiver wire to try to figure out how this is going to go. Maybe they have to cancel the game. I see all those things as reasonable possibilities. And since they're reasonable possibilities, they should have been realized as possibilities by the NFL. So I am going to say, from right here, at least at this moment, they should not be worried, because this is something that we were pretty much guaranteed to have happen given what the setup was. But Dan hit on it. We don't really know what the now what is for the NFL under these circumstances. But if they are worried by this, that means they didn't have a plan, right? If they have a plan, this should just be something you would think would happen.
Yeah, I hate to sort of crown the college football as sort of the kings of preparation, but we were waiting on this to happen to a big conference, to at least a big school in college football. And we got that last week when Notre Dame had to postpone their game with Wake Forest because of COVID tests. But I don't know if it's thanking their lucky stars or the football gods or what. It worked out really perfect for them because they had built in those contingency plans by having sort of bye weeks throughout the season that would protect them or be some kind of buffer should this happen. And it did. It worked out perfect for Notre Dame, because despite the fact that today, I think the last report, there were 39 players on Notre Dame unavailable because of COVID, they are still, as of now, looking like they're going to be able to play Florida State on October 10th because, again, it went up against their bye week. So I think NFL didn't have as many contingency plans, at least not any that I know of. And you mentioned there will be some Titans players that probably won't be available to play against the Steelers should they actually play this game. But the facilities are closed down until Saturday. So what kind of game are you expecting when you can't even work out together as a team, except for virtually, until Saturday, a day before you're supposed to play the Steelers? We're certainly going to see what this looks like. I believe the protocol says that a player can return within 5 days if they're asymptomatic, which these players on the Titans look to be, and they clear 2 positive tests within that 5 days. But again, when you do contract tracing, you're also talking about 48 Minnesota players that are impacted. If you're the Steelers right now, do you want to face a team with so much up in the air? I'm not really sure. I would be concerned, but not quite panic meter just yet if I was the NFL.
Can I ask the question, though, about getting it figured out? Because by normal standards, football is dehumanizing and violent, and the human body takes an uncommon toll. But you've seen through a couple of weeks of the season, there have been an uncommon number of injuries because there was no preseason and because this game is really hard. If you now start taking the Titans out, they can't practice, they can't have physical contact. Everything you hear about wrestling and football is that guys have to get their bodies calloused for this stuff. There are going to be more and more injuries. How much of this are you willing to suffer in the face of a virus when the virus isn't the only thing that does the damage?
Bigger deal, Patrick Mahomes looking unstoppable or Lamar Jackson looking completely stoppable?
Wow, Lamar, this is what happens. One thing that has not gone well for Lamar Jackson is that the last two times that he has played on national television in front of everybody, his team laid an egg, and he did not look good in that game. And, of course, Patrick Mahomes looked unstoppable. But Lamar looking completely stoppable to me was the bigger deal, because there's one clear answer to me as to why he looks so stoppable in this game. The Ravens coaches got their keisters handed to them on both sides of the ball. Like, you got a defense that couldn't get itself off the field and an offense that kept putting them right back on the field. You're not going to beat the Chiefs doing all of that blitzing. If you can't get pressure with four people, you're not going to get it done on that side of things. And then the Ravens did again what they have a tendency to do, and it confuses me to no end. When they get behind, they feel like suddenly they have to turn into a new team and try to throw the ball a lot on early downs. Your regular offense is explosive. You can keep running that. You don't have to bail in the second quarter. My man Jeff Schwartz made this point. Down 28-3, the Rams kept running their regular offense against Buffalo, and they wound up taking the lead. There's no need to panic. And it seemed to me that both of the Ravens coordinators got gassed by their counterparts.
Yeah, their rushing attack was working really, really well until they completely abandoned it. But, like, I'm so tired of this sort of Lamar Jackson. Like, now he looks infallible when we all thought he was infallible. This dude is 21-1 in the regular season against everybody not named the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, yes, they have his number in particular because they force him to do something that he doesn't normally do, which is throw the ball constantly and consistently. And also they pressure him in a way that no one else does, and they're more successful at pressuring him than anybody else is. But at the same time, like, let's not take away from the fact what we're seeing from Patrick Mahomes. Let's not normalize this. It's bananas. The best way I can think of it is when I watch him, is he's like that dude that walks up to you while you're holding your girlfriend's hand at the bar and hits on her and then winks at you when he gets her number, knowing that your mother slid into his DMs 2 hours ago. He is taunting us. It's an absolute joke what this kid is able to do. So stop comparing the two. He is not his rival. Mahomes doesn't have a rival, except for maybe, like, I don't know, what's that dude? M. Bison from Street Fighter, or Bo Jackson from Tech Mobile.
Yeah, I think she's right about that, because it's not even players from the past. It's ghosts. Like, you can say this is the best we've ever seen this position played without disrespecting Aaron Rodgers or Dan Marino or John Elway or anybody. Let's just say, let's just throw to the side the left-handed flip pass to the fullback because they have great scheming, or the deep pass to Hartman where he's rolling. He's not even rolling to his left. He's creating time by backing up to his left and throwing across his body. Forget those two plays. Let's just check in with another one here. How frustrating do you think it is to be Humphrey here? You're coming in untouched, and he jumps up in the air. Let's look at this from another angle. I want to look at this from another angle so you guys can see. He's untouched, and he turns around, and now watch him at the end, because this is what it is to play against him. I'm just going to put my head in my hands at the end of this, very frustrated, because you can't do anything when the guy is jumping up in the air, toying with you like that, and on a pump fake, you're looking back because you want to watch him the rest of us want to watch it.
Coming up next on my Soul Stevie Show.
You think if that team wasn't in Los Angeles, like if it was the Phoenix Suns and Doc Rivers was there, and Kawhi saying, I'm coming here for you, I don't
think
so. The
Oklahoma City Thunder.
National Voter Registration Day is September 22nd. For more information, visit IamAVoter.com.
Will a new coach fix the Clippers?
All right, so this is interesting because Steve Ballmer is a titan of industry. He has spent billions around this Clippers team, and this move says to me, whether we argue the semantics of whether you think Doc Rivers should have been fired or shouldn't have been fired, this says to me that he realizes, oh, I've got 1 year to fix this. I've got 1 year to give Kawhi Leonard what he needs, because we traded our entire future, the next decade of draft picks, to get Paul George. They have more invested in this, and they know more than us about what's happening in that locker room. And if this move is made, it's because the player is more powerful than the coach at this point. And whether you think Doc Rivers should have been fired or not, it doesn't matter. They got to make sure they keep Kawhi and Paul George beyond this season.
I mean, and maybe this is about player power, or maybe it's about after all these years and all these teams that don't get along and you never get to the conference finals, maybe it's just time for you to get another head coach. Like, I don't even think this has to be super deep on the macro. I'm surprised they didn't fire him as soon as the season was over. This seems like time is up. They've changed the players. They've done all kinds of things expecting something different, and they haven't gotten it. Right now, one thing people always have to remember when a coach gets fired, you can make a plausible argument for firing 75% of the coaches in any given league if you want to fire the coach. So this isn't about what semantics you cook up to try to go around it. I don't blame them for looking at this and saying, like Dan said, one, we've got 1 year left and we got to figure this out. And two, what has having Doc Rivers as our coach gotten us? It got you one big thing. It got those dudes back on the court in 2014 during the Donald Sterling thing and staved off a boycott. They showed a measure of appreciation to him probably by him having the job as long as he did. But the goodwill that he had from that apparently has run out.
This is one of those moves. This is sort of like, you guys will remember this back in the day when Marty Schottenheimer gets fired from the Chargers. And it's like, they were a 14-2 team, but you were like, no, it totally makes sense. Like, you know, we don't have to bring up his record when he has a 3-1 lead or the fact that his rigidity probably cost him in the playoffs. Like, his rotations were weird and his inability to sort of figure out Nikola Jokic. Like, all of those things come into play. I do think that this was just such an odd year. I mean, in a typical year, you're not going to have a stoppage right when you seem to find your footing, like the Clippers did right before the season was postponed. You're not going to have to deal with the effects of Lou Williams visiting an adult establishment and getting chicken wings, or someone having to leave and what that looks like. I do think that Doc probably is the sacrificial lamb here, but in terms of where he goes next, because I do think he's going to get a job and I think he's going to be fantastic at the next place. A lot of people are saying, well, he should go to the Sixers. And I think that's a big meh. Why would you leave one, you know, organization that has not been able to sort of figure out from a molecular level what they want to do with their roster? A lot of people throwing out the Rockets. I think the person that definitely doesn't want him to come is Austin Rivers, because we all remember his dad traded him away to begin with. So he doesn't want him to come to Houston. I go Pelicans. Am I crazy here? I just feel like he was responsible for sort of making a franchise in the Clippers relevant again. And he has an opportunity to do that in New Orleans with fresh young talent. And he has the ability to do something that no one's been able to do in New Orleans, which is keep some of those big names in place and make them a free agent destination. Because whether Kawhi Leonard and Paul George had a lot to do with whether he got fired or not, which it seems like they did, he's also the reason that they came to the Clippers. So I think it makes the most sense to hire him down in New Orleans.
Is he really the reason that those guys went down there, though? Like
Kawhi,
that's the only
Leonard
thing I'm saying.
In the meeting, Bo, he said, I'm coming here for you.
Yeah, I say stuff like that to people from time to time. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the truth. Like you think if that team wasn't in Los Angeles, like if it was the Phoenix Suns and Doc Rivers was there, and Kawhi saying, I'm coming here for you,
City Thunder.
Yeah, did he say that while they were standing on the beach? And he looked at Doc and said, I'm coming here for you. And Doc thought he was pointing at him, but in reality, he was pointing at the waves.
Do you question if hurdling tacklers is cool?
All right, I think I have this right. I believe there is only one sports team that will make Bomani emotional. It is University of Texas football. He may deny it, but when they're losing to Texas Tech, I feel his anger from a world away, and they've got a running back, Bijan Robinson. Let's check in with him. He is very athletic. This is horrible. Yeah, it's unpleasant. And now, of course, we're going to slow it down.
Oh, yeah, my
guys,
God.
Guys need to stop doing this. They need to stop jumping over people. I don't care how athletic they are. But young people are flexible. They bounce back. Bomani, that is the only team that makes you upset, right?
Look, man, I have not been able to get into the college football season because it just felt a little bit disjointed. And I was watching on Twitter as the lead was dissipating and the anger that was brewing in my soul. And then I turned on the game and they eventually came back and won it. Like, it's a fantastic thing. They managed to make this happen. And, you know, Tom Herman was out there in front, you know, when the Black Lives Matter stuff first got there, he showed himself to be concerned about where his players were coming from and everything else. I just hope he understands. I don't give a damn about none of that right now, man. It ain't about to be this. Like, we got a new defensive coordinator, Chris Ash. I'm just saying this right now. When the only thing I know about the new defensive coordinator is he's a dude from Rutgers, it does not make me optimistic. And nothing about what I saw there made me optimistic.
The question of, is Texas football back, has become the new, is this the year that the Rockets small ball lineup will finally work? The answer is no. And until they're actually back, and we stop asking the question. But the truth is, well, let's just say, Bo, like, it's getting really annoying. You guys beat a Georgia team that doesn't even care about the Sugar Bowl. The Sugar Bowl, now Texas football is back. You do this every year. Like, I'm tired of hearing about it.
I like better how it sounds when I say it, number one. And number two, I would just like to make the point that Georgia hasn't won a national championship since 1980.
That's all well and good.
Here's the point, she said, is that for not Bijan scorpioning himself,
we would not be talking about Texas football on the show. And I'm glad that he's okay, but I would much rather focus on hurdles like Vernon Davis, where we can just all laugh and not cringe. Look at this hurdle. Didn't work.
That's Texas football's ability to actually be back. Al, you're trying to distract Armani with Vernon Davis. I don't think it's going to work.
I just want to make the simple point. I could not find myself rooting for a team that told Justin Fields to go on about his business because we'd rather keep the elite Jake Fromm.
Well, say something now.
Say a single word.
You ain't about to say nothing.
You ain't about to say nothing.
Okay. Well, Mac Brown ain't walking in that door, Bo.
Oh, my God.
Thank God.
She's still got something for you. She's still got something for you. Mac Brown walks in that door.
He gonna not do his job for five years like the last time he was in it.
Cole McCoy ain't walking through that door, Bo.
You got a hair flip.
Do you question if this is a happy moment?
All right, we've got an engagement, and usually when we're showing you weddings, it's like the bridesmaid or a bride is throwing up or the preacher is throwing up. What do we have here? Is this a happy moment?
Get on her boat.
He's going to slip, right? He's going to slip.
Get on her boat. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh! What a disaster. And now we've
Can we get an update on her? By the way, I don't want to ruin like the romantic element of this any more than it's already been ruined by all this comedy, but he's still going to have to put payments in on this. He ain't had a chance to get it insured.
You got to insure the ring the second that you buy it, Bo. What?
Oh, that's you do?
Yes, my husband got the ring via a Brinks truck that delivered it to the house, and then he immediately took it to the security deposit box.
Like, yeah, not everybody does that. A lot of people let the woman go get that thing appraised and then do the insurance because people don't think that far out. Like, I'm here to tell you right now, if that man didn't have a better plan for his boat proposal, he also did not insure that ring.
By the way, Chief, you don't want the woman to get the ring appraised because some of these women find out those are genetically modified diamonds. I'm just saying.
I got news for you. She gonna do that probably regardless. Curiosity is a monster.
I didn't look. I did not look until... Okay, I did look. I looked. It took a couple years, but I looked, and I was like, I was impressed and also mad at him for spending that much money, but also like, oh my God. You love me this amount.
Streaming online. The Old Man and the Three podcast.
All right, so J.J. Redick is doing a lot of good work via podcasting, preparing for his future broadcasting career after basketball. And he's got Grayson Allen on, and they're talking about who's the most hated Duke player of all time. Christian Laettner would like a word with both of you. But let's hear how this goes.
Who do you think was hated more?
The only reason I would say myself is because of social media.
Yeah.
Like, I became a meme for months. I had friends sending me all these videos and stuff because I wasn't on Twitter at all. So I had friends that were sending me these videos that thought it was funny of all, like, they would, like, Photoshop me laying on the ground with my leg up and, like, just sliding through all these different videos, like, tripping random people and whatever. And it's really funny now, but at the time, I was so annoyed by it.
Okay. Well, yeah, he did have social media. He also had that he was kind of a dirty player. Bomani, what do you got here? You intrigued?
He says the reason for it is social media. Like, people just for no reason at all started making things about you tripping people. It's because you were out here tripping people. Like, JJ was more hated than him because Duke basketball was a bigger deal at the time. But they hated JJ for what he represented. It wasn't about him. He's been in the league for a long time. And everybody likes JJ. It's how nobody really disliked Patrick Ewing. Y'all was just tripping.
L, are you intrigued?
C. But I agree that I think it was JJ just because there was so much like pent up anxiety over who would be the next white boy to hate at Duke. Like it had been some years. I think it was like Steve Wojciechowski. And then there was a few years where Duke's best player was black. So everybody was sort of building up their angst. Like, who's the white boy to hate? And then insert JJ Redick. They hated him because he was good and because he didn't care that he was good and he had a little bit of moxie. But Grayson Allen is Grayson Allen. Like he's
moxie. Yeah, here's my moxie. Question. My real question here. And this is proof that y'all just be too hard on the white dudes when it comes to this. How come more people don't hate Justice Winslow? Remember he was out here hitting people in the crotch all the time? Right? Somehow he escapes. Like if Grayson Allen had done that, we would have thrown him in jail. And guess what? We should have.
We're out of time here. L. Duncan, you can catch her on the Noon Sports Center. You should do so. And the right time with Bomani Jones is essential listening. Get it where you get your podcasts.
Did you guys even know that the Lightning won the Stanley Cup last night?
So wrong what we do to hockey. It's so wrong.
Oh, like it's already over?
It's over. Yeah. Tampa. Yes. Florida. Florida owns hockey. It must infuriate Canada so much.
I'm here to tell you it does.